It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. A new report from the Economic Policy Institute documents the rapid rise in pay for chief executive officers. CEOs make 312 times the average worker. This is one of the highest ratios on record, topped only by the pay inequality in the early 2000s. Larry Michel is a distinguished fellow at the Economic Policy Institute. He first joined EPI in 1987 as research director. He also happens to hold a PhD in economics from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Larry, welcome.
Great to be on the phone with Madison. Great to be on the show.
Yeah. Welcome sort of back to your college town. So this report, I was reading a little bit of it last night. What are the biggest takeaways here?
Well, a few things. CEO compensation was in a lull the last few years, but in 2017, it spiked up and rose like 17-18% to almost $19 million. So this is the CEOs of the very largest firms, the 350 largest firms. Their compensation now is almost back to what it was in 2007, which was before the Great Recession. It was one of the all-time highs. And as you know, the typical worker has not been doing that well. Last year, the typical worker's compensation rose 0.3%. That's basically zero. And hasn't been doing that well for, 40 years. CEOs now make, as you said, 312 times that of a typical worker. Back in 1965, it was 20 times. So it's really symbolic or symptomatic of the tremendous inequality that has grown in this country.
So this is interesting to me because in 2014 and 2015, 2016, a lot of people were talking about inequality, and the election coming up was going to be people voting because they felt left behind, because their wages haven't risen, and the rich guys were getting richer, and the 1%, and all this stuff. What happened?
Well, don't feel too sorry for the CEOs in those days. I mean, they had high compensation. And the compensation of CEOs, and this is a really important thing to understand, are very much tied to the stock market. The big increase in pay this past year was because CEOs cashed out a lot of stock options. Stock options where companies give them the right to buy a stock at a certain price. The CEOs decide if they at a higher price, they want to sell, and they can make a profit if the stock price rises. They were also given a lot of actual grant of stock with a lot of money. That accounted for all of the growth. But this has a broader meaning, which we should dig into for a second. Mm-hmm. There's a big discussion about are CEOs paid for their performance. And some people point out that the CEOs are, pay is very much tied to the stock market, and I think that's true. But they are, they're not getting paid according to whether the stock of their firm does better than other firms they compete with. The whole stock market grew by 14.5% last year in inflation-adjusted terms. So, all the firms saw their stock rise. It's not necessarily that each individual CEO did better than their competitors. So, it's not clear that it was their individual performance or that their firm somehow did better. So, when you're tied to the stock market overall, that's the performance of the stock market and overall profits and not necessarily to how your particular firm is doing.
So that leads me to, why is the stock market going so high? I've talked to economists who say there is going to be a correction. There's going to be a correction soon. We have the economy has been heated up, but the stock market seems to be heating up even faster.
Well, if I could tell you what explains the stock
market. Yes, I know.
He's a lot richer than I am.
Yes.
But
me too.
Yeah, and I'm not rich. It somewhat reflects the fact that we've had a tremendous growth in profits, and the profits have grown, you know, and squeezed out actual workers' wages and benefits. That's been a much talked about topic. The profit share is at historic highs. Profits have grown tremendously over the last 10, 20, 30 years. You know, but at the same time, we don't see historic highs in investment. We don't see historically fast growth in efficiency or productivity. We, in fact, see very slow growth in productivity, which is kind of troubling. In the last 10, 12 years since 2005, has been very slow growth. That's why it was very, in my mind, kind of odd, to just be polite about it, to go to a big tax cut to corporate America,
right?
Which the whole idea was to give them more profits to get them to invest more. Well, they already had historically high profits, and they were not investing, and they were not creating the productivity. It wasn't clear that giving them more profits was going to really turn the trick, and it hasn't turned the trick.
So here's my question. Did this tax cut artificially raise stock prices, which raised CEO compensation levels because they're so tied to stock prices?
Well, we don't know that from these data yet, because these are for 2017. And the tax cut was at the end of 2017. But I suspect that you know, we will see some pretty high CEO pay in 2018, and it'll be tied to the stock market. And the stock market is going up. The companies are also buying back a lot of their stock. One of the phenomena that's frequently talked about, and should be, is that one way that the companies are using their big profits is not to invest, but to buy their stock. What happens when they buy their own stock is that, you know, creates bigger demand for their stock. It drives up the stock price.
Mm-hmm.
When you drive up the stock price, hey, what happens to their CEO's pay? Does pretty well. So it doesn't, you know, buying stocks, in my perspective, does not, you know, really improve the capacity of our economy, the capacity of these firms. It doesn't raise productivity. It's not raising the investment. It's really, you know, in some ways you could say it's also a sign that the firms don't see very profitable opportunities to actually invest in their own firms' capacity, either equipment or workers or software, automation, et cetera.
So I understand. I think I understand why companies don't invest in workers, because if they can get workers who will work for cheap, then why pay them? My question is, and we're going to be going to break in a second. We can talk about this, but my question is there going to be a turn in terms of their unemployment is so low that workers are going to be demanding higher wages now? And what is the what's the thinking behind not investing in equipment to make your business run better? So answer that last one first.
Yeah. Well, two things. One, you know, I think if workers' wages were rising faster, they would spur the companies to invest more. I think that we should talk more about this after the break, perhaps.
Yes.
But I think we're in a bad spot. It's going to take a lot to shock the companies to really change the way they behave.
Shock the companies.
A long period of low unemployment.
Shock the companies. I want to follow that up when we come back. We're talking to Larry Michel. He's a distinguished fellow at the Economic Policy Institute, and he helped write a report that came out today that showing that CEO to worker pay is 312-1. We'll be back in a moment. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. CEO pay is on the rise and getting higher. This despite the fact that earnings for the companies they run aren't necessarily going up in the same way. What's driving this and how will it affect the economy? We're exploring this with Larry Michel, who is one of the authors of a report out today from the Economic Policy Institute. We're taking your calls on this, 800-642-1234. Should employees receive pay raises according to the rise in profits and stock rather than performance, much like CEOs do? Would that even things out? 800-642-1234 or ideas at WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. I want to be clear here again, Larry, that it's not that that corporations' profits aren't going up. It's just that they aren't going up as much in terms of percentage as CEO pay, correct?
Well, over the long term, that's absolutely true. CEO pay, well, you know, hold on to your seat for this. Since 1978 has risen by 1,070%. That's 1,070%.
Wow.
Stock prices, inflation adjusted in that time, have risen you know, around a third slower than that. And profits have risen quite a lot, but not as fast as the CEO pay. Another remarkable thing, if you compare CEO compensation to the pay of the very highest paid earners, those not in the top 1%, the top 0.1%, the 1,000th, the pay of the top 1,000th of earners rose about 308% since 1978. Now, that's a heck of a lot. You know, workers, on the other hand, rose 11%.
Mm.
So workers, 11%. Top earners, 308%. CEOs, 1,070%, three times faster than their than other very high earners. And let me say why that's important. Because I think that, you know, some folks, some analysts, a lot of economists would tell you that CEOs are being paid high, but that's just what the market for talent
right
is. And but the, here's the thing, the CEOs are now earn 5.5 times what other very very high earners earn. You know, back in the 1970s they earned like three times. So, you know, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't follow. The very high earners are not all that different than what the CEOs are. They have the similar educations. Obviously, whatever you think got them there, if you want to think it's all merit and that they're ambitious and highly skilled, you know, they earn a lot of money, but they're nowhere near the CEOs. So,
and do the very high earners, are they on the path to become CEO? So there's that jump in salary?
Not necessarily. I mean, they're in a lot of different fields. You know, the very high pay in our society really is dominated by two groups. I mean, you know, if you read the popular media, you think it's all actors and celebrities and, you know, basketball stars. But it's really two groups. One group is executives, CEOs and other executives. And the second group is people in the financial sector. And one of the phenomena you mentioned earlier, you didn't mention them specifically, but the Occupy Wall Street popularized the whole idea of the top 1%. And there was a lot of discussion of that in you know, 2012, mm-hmm. 13, 14, et cetera. And that is a useful thing to think about because it used to be that the top 1% had about 9, 10% of all income in the country back in 1979, but by before this recession, they had up to 22%. They more than doubled. That's 22% of all the income generated in a year went to the top 1%, 10 percentage points more than like 40 years ago. So what drove that? Well, what drove that, the largest single factor was the increased pay to executives. And the second largest factor is the increased pay to those people in the finance sector and the expansion of of the number of highly paid people in the financial sector. So that's why I've come to believe that this issue of CEO compensation, it's not symbolic, it's not about the aesthetics, it's not just, you know, resentment or anything like that. It actually drives really large shifts in our economy, drives the income up for the top 1%. When the CEO compensation goes up, by the way, that we're talking about people working in publicly held firms that sell stock.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of firms that are privately held, okay? Their pay will go up as well because they've got to meet the standards that, or else people will leave for these other firms. You see a huge increase in the pay of the heads of nonprofit hospitals, of universities, may I say, you know, of the whole nonprofit sector. So they, you know, this CEO compensation goes up. It pulls up the pay of a whole lot of people, and that helps, you know, bring up the pay of the top 1%. And that matters for the typical worker. Let me explain why. I'll do that very quickly. You know, it's our view. What I've already said is that the pay of the CEOs is far higher than that of other high wage earners. We interpret that, many economists interpret that, as it's not really related to the performance of the firms. You don't have to pay the CEOs this much to get them to wake up in the morning and do a good job, or to do the job that they are doing. You could cut their pay by a third, and you would still have the same amount of firm output, GDP, et cetera. What that means is that the money going to the top 1% driven by the CEO compensation is not really available for other people. And it really cuts into, you know, the wage growth of the average worker.
So I want to get back to what we were talking about before the break. I should note that we are talking to Larry Michel, Economic Policy Institute, who just put out a report on CEO salaries. They're pretty high. We are also taking your calls, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So what we were talking about before the break was this workers versus investment, that companies are not paying workers more, and they're not investing in their in equipment in the future. Like, and that part of it is very interesting to me. They're running a company, and they're not investing in the future of the company. What are they doing, and what is going to happen to these companies down the road?
Well, I think it's a very interesting point to note that investment in plant and equipment, in software, is all historically very low. In fact, since 2005, the productivity of firms, the investment in firms, in equipment, in software, in information equipment, has been the slowest in the entire period since World War II. And people should think about that when they hear claims that automation is very rapid. You can't have automation, which means a software or equipment replacing people, if there's not a big growth of equipment or software in the workplace, right? It's going on, but it's not historically rapid. In fact, it's historically slow. And what I was talking about before the break is I think we're in sort of a bad spot. Firms have had all the power in the labor market for many years, and I think they got there, and we should have a conversation about how this got established. But, you know, they have all the leverage, and individual workers don't have very much. And that put them in a spot where firms have become very entitled. They believe they should be able to get workers to come work for them at whatever they offer and do the jobs, whatever kind of jobs they want to offer, whatever times of day, whatever, you know, attributes the jobs have, and they have not been upgrading that, and they have not developed systems the way we used to have, which were called internal labor markets, where you bring people in at a entry level, various spots in the firm, and then you keep them, and you train them, and you make them into the kind of workers that you need. So when people, businesses shout about shortages, the first thing that economists say is, if there's a shortage, you would expect wages to be going up much more,
mm-hmm.
right? If there's when there was a shortage, now many of the listeners won't remember the lines outside of gas stations in the 1970s, but when there was a shortage of gasoline, prices went up,
mm-hmm.
right? They didn't stay the same, okay? If there's a shortage, you expect in economics the price to go up to try to attract more people to provide that. And in a labor market, it's we want to raise wages to attract more people to work or to work for me. So I think we're in a spot. And one of the things that has not been talked about, and, you know, I think in Wisconsin it's a really important place to talk about it, is the attack on collective bargaining. So here's the thing. Most firms, understandably, they're not getting the workers they want, and they're afraid to raise wages because they'll have to raise prices.
Okay, so, you know, I'm going to stop you there, and we're going to go to another break, and we will be back to talk about collective bargaining. We have a couple of callers who want to talk about that. Also, we are talking about a new report that looks at CEO compensation. We will be back in a moment with Larry Michel. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We are talking this hour with Larry Michel. He is a distinguished fellow at the Economic Policy Institute, and he just helped write a report that talks about the high CEO pay and the high CEO-to-worker ratio. We are taking your calls. Do you think that CEOs make too much? Do you foresee rising CEO pay as an indicator of a market crash? Or is it something that is good for the economy? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Larry, we do have some calls on this, and it fits in what you were talking about just before the break. Jimmy from Valley Junction, welcome to the program.
Morning. Yeah, I'm just... for example, the collective bargaining thing. If Walmart had a union in there, the CEO, according to the internet, which is always true, is making 1,188 times more than any of the frontline workers, and all the Walton siblings are worth about $50 billion. So, if you're an individual employee that goes in and asks for a raise, they're going to tell you to don't let the door hit you. You know where.
Mm-hmm.
But if a union would go in and say we're all walking unless we get a living wage and some decent working conditions, that would have an impact. And until the playing field is more level for unions, I don't think this thing is going to change.
Thank you for that, Jimmy. Larry Michel, unions are fewer in numbers and have less power, and that is intentional.
Yes, absolutely correct. And I, in fact, that's a great point, and it was what we were getting to in the discussion. The erosion of unions and collective bargaining has been the single largest factor undercutting the wages of middle-class men in America. And it's affected not only those who remain in unions or those who were in unions, but all non-union workers who are basically blue-collar or non-college educated, because firms that used to have workers bargain with them, unions, used to set a wage, and other firms, either the same firm in their non-union facilities or workforce or their competitors, would have higher wages and follow the union pattern. And so the wages of non-union workers were also lifted by union collective bargaining. In fact, you know, non-union workers have lost about $3,000, $4,000 apiece each year now because of the erosion of collective bargaining. But it's also created the system that we're in. And let's get back to that. Firms say they face shortages. They're afraid to raise wages because they're afraid they're going to raise prices. And that's kind of understandable. And so what we have is an institutional problem. A firm doesn't want to raise prices when it doesn't know that its competitors will raise prices.
Mm-hmm.
But if the firm was part of a system where it was bargaining together as an industry, or it knew that as in the days when the UAW used to set a wage pattern in auto, you know, it would have an agreement with the GM, and they knew that Ford and Chrysler would follow, and the auto parts would mimic that, et cetera. So there's no engine to wage growth anymore that solves that problem of nobody wanting to put their foot in the water, toe in the water of wage increases. But when they all do it, then we can see the wage growth. And, you know, you could have too much of that. Economists used to worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
40 years ago.
Right.
We're very far from having to worry about that. And I think what we have is firms have built institutions that rely on a very disempowered workforce. And let me just mention one aspect to it, which is, you know, every individual worker now takes a job, and they're not even basically know what the deal is. It's not transparent. They don't know all about what their wages are going to be. They don't know what the deductions are going to be in their paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
They are asked to sign non-compete agreements. They're asked to sign these agreements called forced arbitration agreements, where they're not allowed to take the company to court over sex discrimination, race discrimination, wage and hour violations, like working off the clock. And they are forced not only to have to go to a company-dominated arbitration system, they're not allowed to do it collectively. So they have to do it individually. And, like, one worker who is being ripped off for $150 a year can't really pursue an arbitration. But if you have 1,000 or 10,000 doing it with lawyers, they can. But, you know, that's not available anymore. 56% of non-union workers are forced into these private arbitration schemes now. 56%. And it's going to go up even more because the Supreme Court just basically gave the a big go-ahead to do it even more.
We are talking about CEO pay with Larry Mischel, who just wrote a report for the Economic Policy Institute on the ratio of CEO pay to worker compensation, which is about 312-1. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Mike from Madison, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My big comment is the fact that historically there's been this push for trickle-down economics. You know, give tax breaks to the rich, give tax breaks to corporations, and the money will flow. But the problem is that we've seen historically that that money does not flow down. And in fact, like your guest said, is that these CEOs are doing, and these companies are doing stock buybacks, and they're essentially reinvigorating that economy with more and more money at the very, very top. The problem is it's not the CEOs and it's not the people who are making so much money who are buying services and goods. It's the everyday worker. It's the everyday person. And if they don't have the money to buy these services and goods, nobody will ever buy them. So we've essentially gone from a goods purchasing and service purchasing economy to more of a, hey, let's put all this money in the stock market and retrieve our dividends. But yet it's not based on anything, and it's eventually going to, the bottom's going to fall out. I mean, our economy is essentially going to starve itself.
Thank you, Mike, for that. What do you say to that, Larry? Our economy is going to starve itself. We are ignoring the people who actually purchase the goods and services that we supposedly sell.
Well, I think that one reason we do have a too slow growth is that we do have, inequality so extreme that there's not enough consumption being generated by the vast middle class and low-income people. But let's just talk about this trickle-down economics for a second because, you know, I graduated from Madison in 1982. In the time period that I was in grad school and now, we've had three huge sets of tax cuts driven by, you know, frankly, Republican presidents, sometimes with the help of Democrats in Congress, but mostly, without much of their help. The first time under Reagan, and it didn't work. Then under George W. Bush, another big cut.
Mm-hmm.
Cut in the taxation on capital gains, on dividends, as well as on the top income taxes. When we got around to the tax cuts last year, in polls, nobody wanted it in the public, neither Democrats nor independents, nor did Republican voters really think that tax cuts for the rich and corporations were warranted. It's one of the most popular things in America is to raise taxes on the rich and corporations. But this was driven exclusively by an interest in my view, benefiting Republican donors, corporate America, and who got the biggest tax cuts. Are we seeing wages? Are wages going to rise as a result? Unlikely. Nothing, no evidence for that so far. Is it raising investment? Not any more than we would expect in any kind of recovery. Are we seeing more stock buybacks? We see the profits go up, yes. We see stock prices go up, yes. So it isn't working. People don't want it. It's purely a political payoff, in my view, based on an ideology that hardly any economist would support.
So my question, though, is that will the bottom drop out of the economy? Is this going to hurt us in the long run that we are not paying attention necessarily to the people who buy goods and services, and we've created this kind of second economy that swirls around the top?
Well, I'm not going to predict that the bottom is going to fall out, but I do think it's part of the overall stagnation of the economy over the years. And listen, let's be honest about this. I've been writing about wage stagnation for 30 or more years. It's only in recent years that it's become broadly accepted by both conservatives and liberals and Republicans, Democrats, that that is a real phenomenon. Everybody understands that workers have not been seeing their wages rise faster than inflation for many, many years. That has made for a very ugly America. You know, we have a very polarized politics. We have people, a lot of divisiveness, rise of racism, a rise of anti-immigrant feelings, and people, instead of people thinking it's good when some people do well, they say, why are they doing better than I am? That's a bad place to be, I think, as a nation and as a community. And so, you know, we have to get out of that, and we have to change our laws to empower workers to have more power vis-a-vis their employers, individually, collectively through unions, through labor standards, like a much higher minimum wage, through various kinds of ways to, you know, change it. The power relationship has shifted so far to where companies dominate that we are in a really bad place.
We are talking to Larry Michel. He is a distinguished fellow at the Economic Policy Institute, which just put out a report detailing the high rate of CEO pay. We're going to be back in a moment, and we've got calls coming in here. We will be taking your calls. It's The Morning Show. We are on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking this morning about CEO pay. A new report just came out saying that CEO pay ratio to worker compensation is 312-1. This is not the highest it's ever been. It was higher before the stock market crash in 2007. Do you see an increase in CEO pay in your workplace? Are you seeing greater productivity? And how are workers being compensated? Should workers maybe have a hand in also in rising pay according to stock? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Larry Michel, we've got people calling in. Mark from Appleton, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I just wanted to comment. The industry I work in is the travel management industry. And there's one company in particular that comes to mind when you're talking about this subject is they were opening up stores in China as well as they had plants in China. And the average worker was going over there to open the stores and to get them running and to work in their factories and so forth. And the company was very, very budget conscious on their airfare, which I totally understand. And particularly in the travel management industry, we work on behalf of the client. The CEO, in this case, he was so entitled when he would go over there. For example, we would look at a $1,200 airfare for the average worker to go over there, and they would come back and nickel and dime us, trying to get it lower, lower, lower. The CEO, between two flights, his flights only, that's not including any ground operations for him whatsoever, he spent $50,000.
Wow.
So the entitlement there was just horrific. And I no longer work in that department because I would see this stuff day in and day out, and it just ate at me. But, yeah, I just the entitlement that these CEOs think that they should have.
Thank you very much for that, Mark. That brings me to something else, Larry, that there seems to be a disconnect, maybe. I remember this when the stock market crashed, that there were people in New York who worked in the financial industry who didn't understand why people outside of New York and the financial industry were so upset. Because clearly, their problem was that the credit markets froze. And as soon as you got the credit markets unfroze, then everything was fine. So is that part of it? There's just this disconnect that there are people in this country who are part of the top 1% who don't see the rest of us?
Well, I think that's how people feel, and I think that may, in fact, be true. And it speaks to this CEO-to-worker compensation ratio, 312, and why it matters, which is, it does reflect a disconnect and a difference, and that people don't really feel that the CEO is thinking about them. Or that the CEO is mostly thinking about himself. They are mostly men, by the way. And it's been shown in some studies that really matters for productivity. And I think it matters overall. I mean, I think that there is a strong sense in this country that there are is increasingly a top tier of people that don't care about them. I think what we talked about with the tax cuts is actually an example, frankly. I mean, I think the top just went out and grabbed a whole bunch of money to put in their pocket, despite what the vast majority of voters, Republican and Democrat, actually thought.
Okay, so I'm going to take a caller on that who wants to talk about this. David from New Richmond, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, back in the Bush administration, I lost my job and I took out a home equity line of credit, started a business. Luckily, I'm still going, have a couple employees, and I really want to disagree with your guest's comment about the tax cuts, because I'm dealing with corporations that tell me that they did not spend a bunch of money that they had during the last administration because there was tax clawbacks were threatened. They didn't know what was going to happen with the taxes. Now that they have an idea where it's going, they're spending money, and these big grain companies I deal with don't anticipate wages going up until the money that they've already had built up is being spent, and then wages are going to start going up.
Oh no!
In demand, and I see that there's opportunities out there, and it isn't, to me, it isn't as bleak as what your guest is.
Thank you. I thank you very much for that, David. I need a not bleak voice this morning, Larry. Clawbacks. Explain to me what that is.
I'm not sure what they're referring to.
I guess what I'm thinking of is uncertainty in the market. I think that's partly what David brought up.
Yeah.
That there was uncertainty in the market, and now there's certainty. It may not be a certainty that you particularly like, but there is certainty in the market, and so people are acting.
Well, so on bleakness, let me just say that the economy. Listen, we have a very low unemployment. It's lower than what it has been for many, many years. This is part of a trend that's been going on since the recovery in 2009. It's not, the responsibility of any one particular president.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing, frankly, that somehow companies were refraining from profitable investments earlier that now are doing so, because of the tax cuts. And the evidence from, we know in the aggregate from government statistics collected on investments that there is no surge in investment. So that's not happening. And the other thing is, what does it take if, wages are going to grow? They say wages will grow eventually. Well, if they're not going to grow now, then there's something wrong now. It's not. I'm a big supporter in getting the unemployment rate down. I thought we would see much faster wage growth now than we're getting, and I'm disappointed by that. And I think it really makes us look at what is our whole system going on that is so suppressing wages and keeping people from adequately benefiting from the recovery.
And we're going to take some more calls here. Ron from Black River Falls, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I came in late to the program, so I don't know if your guest has addressed this, but I'm interested in his thoughts on the role of corporate board governance on kind of maybe creating the problem or what role it has had and what role corporate board governance has in any potential solutions.
Larry?
I think that's a very interesting question, and it's interesting that there are members of Congress in the Senate. I know Elizabeth Warren just introduced a new bill to change corporate board governance and to make 40% of boards representatives of workers, and other senators have similar type of legislation. I think this is a remarkable development that American politicians are moving towards what is called co-determination in Germany. Listen, the fact that CEOs make a lot of money is because they live in a Lake Wobegon world, right? They believe all their CEOs are above average, so they want to pay them above average. And that keeps on ratcheting up pay every year. So it is about corporate governance, and people have to change how things...
Okay, I want to get to another call. One more.
Sure.
Kurt brings up something that other people have brought up before. Kurt, Kirk, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on the show. I want to put to the caller and the viewing audience and the producers, I think this conversation might have a confused predicate. We're basing this conversation upon wages. Yes, wages are good. Wages are necessary. I think that wages are no longer that which drive the economy. Maybe we should talk about framing the conversation as in terms of the investors driving the market, the investors driving the business model, the investors driving the economy. We used to be a labor force derived nation, and we're resisting.
Okay, Kurt, I got it. We are leaving the show. What I understood that he was going to ask Larry was workers as shareholders. Are you seeing more of that? You have about 15 seconds.
Well, I think he's saying that he wants an economy where we focus on investors and they make the economy hum. And I think that's the tried and failed system beliefs of the last 40 years. I think we need to have an environment where investors want to invest and firms want to do well, but we have to do it in a context where everyone is doing well.
Okay. Larry Michelle is a distinguished fellow at the Economic Policy Institute. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.